Hello, Bloodstream listeners. Host Patrick James Lynch here. Happy New Year. Happy 2020. Happy New Decade. And what better way to start a new decade than by bringing you a very exciting announcement on this, a very special episode of the Bloodstream podcast. We will be back, as always, with our flagship episode, third Monday of the month. But we wanted to bring you this because it's a bit time-sensitive, and like I said, it's pretty exciting. Regular listeners to Bloodstream Media and people who know about Believe Limited are aware that we produce podcasts, web series, live events, and much more for the bleeding disorders community, but Believe also produces content such as films and other forms of entertainment for other patients and families impacted by rare and chronic health challenges as well. Of course, Bombardier Blood is something we've spoken about quite a bit that is about hemophilia, a feature documentary that I directed and Alex Borstein executively produced. My Beautiful Stutter, we've spoken about, that my partner and co-founder at Believe Limited, Ryan Geelan, directed, and I was honored to be an executive producer on alongside Paul Rudd and George Springer. And Sometimes I Think About Dying, we spoke about on this very podcast about a year ago with actor and producer Katie Wright Mead. It's a short film that Ryan and I, Believe Limited, executively produced that Katie co-wrote with its director, Stephanie Abel Horowitz, who was featured in a fantastic write-up in The Hollywood Reporter today, if you want to Google that. But Sometimes I Think About Dying, it's based on a play by Kevin Armento called Killers that Katie and Stephanie worked on and then developed into this short film, which premiered at Sundance in 2019 last year and has now been shortlisted for a 2020 Academy Award for Best Live Action Short. This is an extraordinarily exciting moment for Katie and Steph, Kevin, the greater sit-dad team, as it were. Of course, Ryan and I and Believe Limited are thrilled to have been executive producers on this. But it's also a moment where I feel as Believe Limited, with the mission that we have to use entertainment to effect change and to better the lives of patients and families affected by rare and chronic health conditions, to have not just our friend and, in the case of Ryan, wife, Katie, in this position shortlisted for an Academy Award for her original work, but to have it be about mental health challenges and suicidality. We know how important that is within the bleeding disorders community, and I think culturally we continue to learn more about the needs related to mental health in our country, in our culture. So to have Katie and Steph's beautiful film acknowledged on this level is just extraordinarily exciting. So we wanted to replay the interview with Katie from about 1 year ago so that you could hear a little bit about the process of making the film, why they chose the subject that they did, Katie's personal connection to that material, and get a little bit of insight as to what the process of preparing to have this film premiere at Sundance and come into the world was all about. And now 1 year later, it's been screened at something like 70 festivals. It's won a bunch of awards and, of course, shortlisted for an Oscar. So I want to thank the whole team at Bloodstream and Believe for quickly putting this episode together. We decided to do this kind of last minute here. So thanks everybody for scrambling for this. Takeda, thank you, our founding sponsor. We could not do any of this without you. Please visit bleedingdisorders.com to learn more about what Takeda offers the bleeding disorders community. Enjoy this interview with Katie Wright Mead, then go enjoy Sit Dad on YouTube. There is a link in the program notes, or you can search Sometimes I Think About Dying on YouTube. And if you just so happen to know an Academy Award voter, please let them know what you think of this gorgeous 12-minute film directed by Stephanie Abel Horowitz called Sometimes I Think About Dying. Enjoy the interview, and we'll talk to you in a few weeks.
So this month's interview guest is our dear friend, Katie Wright Mead. She joined us today to talk about her film that was just in Sundance, Sometimes I Think About Dying. I've had the pleasure of knowing Katie for 15 years and have watched her grow as an artist, as an actor. And in New York, she gravitated to auditioning for theater projects that oftentimes had a mental health theme somehow tied to them. Our friends joked about, like, are we going to see another suicide play that Katie's doing? When Katie transitioned out here to Los Angeles, she then directed her energies into producing material and projects that had a mental health component to it. She partnered with Seth Kirshner, who is Benny and Stop the Bleeding, and they produced a night of interactive theater called Find the Light that was centered around mental health stories. Katie's work as an artist in mental health also intersects with her life and her own mental health struggles. And she also lost siblings to their mental health struggles that resulted in suicide. So Katie is very, very both artistically and personally connected to mental health and how it interacts on a professional level and a personal level. So without further ado, here is Katie Wright Mead.
So Natalie and I are joined by our dear friend, colleague, and artist, Katie Wright Mead. Good morning, Katie.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
We just made very nervous to start this off. Good. We're only talking about sensitive and personal things today. So I like to start with high anxiety. I find that to be a really...
I go there fast.
Oh, good. So we're going to get along just fine. You know, it might be interesting for people. So people in the who listen to this may know you from Stop the Bleeding, where you play Stacy, have also been the art director, have also been a producer on it over the course of its a million lives.
A writer.
Katie's responsible for a lot of the art that you see from Believe Limited, including that which you see from Bloodstream Media.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to crop my own headshot for this episode.
You are. Yeah. You got to do your own work for your own thing. So the reason we're here talking to you, aside from just enjoying your company, is you've had a film that went to Sundance recently, and you don't have to necessarily be involved in entertainment to appreciate what it means to have a film in the Sundance Film Festival. In fact, what were those numbers that you had cited earlier?
9,443 shorts were submitted to Sundance this year.
Mm-hmm. And Sometimes I Think About Dying was listed as IndieWire's top 10 must-see short film. So it's on a list of 10 out of theoretically over 9,400. So congratulations.
Woo,
that's
woo.
Unbelievable.
Thank you.
You've been back, what, not even 2 weeks, right? Not even, have you been back a
week? It's
been
a whirlwind. Yeah, I got back last Wednesday, so a week, yeah.
So I'm most interested in talking to you about the subject matter of the film and how you took that and wove it into this narrative piece of entertainment, because I believe we're always talking about entertainment to affect change, and how do we take these topics and kind of weave them through in narratives that are engaging and compelling, but also truthful to the underlying thing that we're trying to represent. Mm-hmm. But I can't help but, we haven't also like talked since you've been back from Sundance. So I saw your Instagramming and the vlogging and like day after day of stuff, but I'm sure you're probably talked out of this to some degree, but what can you share about just like the totality of the experience of being there?
It was a lot more communal and a lot less networky than I expected. It's a lot of artists and filmmakers all in one place. So there's a lot of talking about art and filmmaking. That was really like a nice thing to visit it for a week. It was kind of felt very much like camp. Mm. You were among peers and like-minded people in this very like foreign land. There's a lot of walking. There was a lot of talking. There's a lot of movie watching.
How many things did you see?
I probably averaged 2 screenings a day.
Okay.
And I was there for 7 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a lot of media.
It's a lot of media.
A particular standout for you for any particular reason?
Ooh. I really liked watching another block of short films. It was called Program 3, and it was another set of short films that screened together. Mm-hmm. And there was this one short called Lockdown that I loved that is written and directed by Celine Held and Logan George, and they're a married couple and they've made a bunch of films together. But it's just really sweet, intimate story about high school relationships in a very specific environment. I don't want to give too much away for some reason, but
sure, that's fair. You gave the title. People can check it out.
Lockdown,
if they're interested.
You said it was very communal feeling. Was there a sense of like mentor, mentee of people who have been there versus people who were there for the first time? Was that dynamic in play?
I think I gravitated more towards the first timers. I think we kind of found each other. Or there are a couple veterans, like people who had been there last year, but there was still that energy of like newness and excitement and a little bit like overwhelmed and I'm happy to be here feeling. Mm-hmm. Those are the people that I found. Like we would like just find each other in corners of the parties and geek out about how cool this was.
What was the experience of the premiere? What was like how the run up to it, the actual viewing of it, the chatter afterwards? What was that all
there
like?
It was a bit of a frenzy of like, there were 16 of us staying together in one house. So we were all getting ready at the same time. There were 2 bathrooms and we were just like buzz, 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 buzz. And then we all get into Ubers and we get there and there's the press line and that happened really quick. It's like, you're up. Okay, go. Next group picture. Everybody laugh, smile, funny picture. Ah, you're done. And you're like, that's the Sundance press line that you're going to see pictures of forever. And it just happened. And then the screening itself, I think I just numbed out a bit. I was a little overwhelmed. So I went into like my like happy place. Steph and I, the director, just held hands during the entire screening. We were kind of in this like, I was in this trance of, whoa, this is really real right now. Also, I was sitting by the door and they were letting some people in and out during the screening. So I almost lost my mind at the people letting them in and out. I'm like,
yeah,
this has been a year of my life. Please keep that door closed or I will do something.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like any screenings of stuff I've made, I'm sitting in the back. I want to sit in the back because I want the audience in front of me too. So I can kind of see how they're doing. But then you're privy to all the crap that goes on in the back.
People coming
in and out. There's a weird sound thing.
So and nobody else notices. I talked to people about it after about like, could you tell how many people they let in and out? And they were like, no.
Yeah, zero other people but us, like producer filmmakers who are the ones thinking about it. And what about afterwards? I mean, we'll talk more about what the film is in a second, but I think the title alone, Sometimes I Think About Dying, kind of gives a little bit of a clue as to what's going on. What was the conversation like afterwards? And I guess I'm also curious how much of the conversation was about the artistry of the film and the story of the film and then the subject matter itself.
Well, it's funny. The conversations about the film, most of them I had were not right after the screenings because it's still such a like... People are going to other screenings and going to parties, and it's just such a frenzy. Good energy, but like there's not a lot of like stop and sit and talk time. So the good conversations I've had about it actually have been through email, one-on-one with people after they've seen the screener that I've sent them. It's been people are much more like, the movie's very intimate and I feel like their responses are very intimate intentionally. So like they want to like set aside the time to like connect with me about what they just watched instead of, you know, grab me by the arm after a screening and let me know.
Yeah. It's not like an action movie where you can just be like, that was great. And move on. If you're going to talk about it, you want a different kind of conversation.
I mean, I did have like a couple people I didn't know, like complete strangers, literally grab me by the arm and be like, whoa, you clean up really well. And like one guy did say very loudly in the lobby of the movie theater that ours was his favorite one.
Wow.
And I was like,
thank you, inside voice, please. Yeah. I don't want to become a target.
So
let's talk a little about the film. What is Sometimes I Think About Dying about?
So it's a movie about a woman who thinks about dying.
Huh.
And it's a comedy.
Huh.
It's a dark comedy. She thinks she's so bad at living that she escapes in her own mind where it's safe to numb out, which is a word I used about myself earlier, to numb out and escape into this fantasy of herself dying because she finds comfort in the thought of just disappearing and how you can't disappear any more than after you die. And so she imagines what that would be like, escaping life ultimately.
And I think we've alluded to this. I don't know if I've said it specifically, but in addition to playing that woman, is she a woman? Is that
her
name?
We named her Fran in the play. Fran. Her in the script, she was called Nameless. We named her Fran for the film.
Okay.
So can you talk about that for a minute? You said in the play. Mm-hmm. It was a play first and then you adapted it.
Yeah, what year did we do? 2013. I auditioned for this play for a person I met, recommended me to audition. They called me in. I did the thing, got the part, did the play. And it's like when you meet someone that you know you're going to be friends with. That was that experience. As soon as I got the sides for the audition, I was like, this writer, yes, I want to work with this person. I want to be a part of, I want to be in this world. When I started rehearsals, I clicked with the director. I'm like, ooh, I really respect her. She's smarter than me. I want to be in a room with her a lot. And then, you know, the emotional journey that I took during the rehearsal process was intense. I had just started therapy for the first time in my life. And I was just getting out of a very dark place, and this character lived in that dark place. So I was so scared, and I talked about it in therapy with my therapist. I was so scared of sinking back in there because all I wanted to do when I first read the script was hold this character who was so vulnerable and fragile and in need of connection. I just wanted to like wrap my arms around her and take care of her. But that's not what acting demands. It doesn't want, the character doesn't want, need you to take care of them. It needs you to fill their self with yourself.
Right.
It needs you to be there and go there. So I did, and I was scared, but thank God I was in therapy because I had started acquiring these tools to be able to go to actually in my real life, go to those dark places and come out of them.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, like it makes you wonder, like if you had not been in therapy at that time, what the experience would
I think
like.
It would have been a problem. I really do because I've played roles that have been very dark and needed to go there pre-therapy. And I've gone to some dark places and it's taken me a while to come out. There's been like an emotional hangover after playing these roles. But not with this one. This one felt very much like there was a lot of flow. There was a lot of self-awareness, a lot of releasing. And again, my weekly visits helped with that big time. My therapist actually came and saw the show. She commented on how much humor I brought to the role, which is something she would always say in my therapy session was like, you're very funny. And that's the first time I felt funny in a very long time was when she told me that because I was in such a dark place at that time. And when I read this script, I had that same feeling of this person is so sad, but so delightful and so funny. And I want to that gave me such hope. It's the same hope that I felt when my therapist said that I was funny. It's like, yeah, there is a spark still alive in me.
Mm. So what was the process from then? You said 2013. So what was the process from the play goes up, your therapist comes to see it, play goes down, and we're obviously here now in 2019 with a short film built around Fran. What, give us a little insight into the process and why.
I'm actually more excited to talk about this than to talk about Sundance because this is like the real journey. You know, Sundance is winning a lottery ticket. That's not the real thing. The real thing is what did happen between 2013 and 2018. And it was 5 years of just life and trying, you know, working on different projects and trying out new things and some of them being okay and missing the mark, but flexing my muscles as a producer and a writer and moving to LA and meeting new people there. And the movie didn't happen until the director, Stephanie, moved to LA in 2017. Like she represented that time in my life when I was working on that play that I loved. So I met with her and that's what I wanted to talk about. And I wanted to talk to her about this idea of like making it into a movie maybe. And she was so on board. So we asked Kevin, the playwright, if we could do that. He said yes. And we started just getting at it and writing this adaptation for the screen. And it was so fun. And we had no idea. We didn't even know it was going to be a short film at first. It was like, what are we doing? Is this a feature, a web series? What does it want to be? And it ended up wanting to be, asking so politely, to be a short film. So 8 months later, we had a script. And you know, into those 8 months, we started pre-production. And it was just kind of happening fast, but with intention and using all the things that we'd learned. I'd made another short film that I directed and produced and wrote and raised a lot of money for, too much money for. I look back on and realize like I didn't need to have raised that much money. I could have been more savvy about how I spent it. That's something that I brought into this film. Mm. I was much more respectful of the money that I raised and smarter about asking for favors and not being so scared to ask for help. Mm. So
that's a great thing to one, realize and acknowledge, and then two, to be able to like comfortably say out loud.
Yeah, that was definitely a big priority for me.
And that this film is a culmination of all the work you did before it. This film couldn't have happened without that other film, all the other flexing and, you know, trying something on and it not being the right fit. You know, and
yeah, I mean, if it weren't for that other film, I wouldn't have asked for nearly as much free stuff as I did for this one. Mm-hmm. And that free stuff made it so we could how's our crew? I mean, Believe contributed resources out the wazoo for this film. And
it takes a village.
Yeah, it takes a village. So yeah, that and also all the theater training I had for me to nail the audition, you know, it's like I wouldn't have been able to get that role in the play if I hadn't had dozens of terrible auditions that taught me to prepare for an audition as though I had the role. And it just goes back and back and back. Like everything adds up into itself.
When you and Stephanie started working on the script, not knowing, like you said, is it going to be a web series? Is this a feature? Oh, it wants to be a short.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about the why. You know, why in 2013 did the character and the material feel like someone you were going to be friends with? Why did in 2017, why was it something that was still obviously living presently with you? And needed to become something? Like, why? What is in the material that just compelled you? Because you have had other opportunities. You've been involved in other projects. And we both know how, you know, a component of one project can spiral out to become its own thing you want to work on. But so often, you know, you do it and you have your takeaways. Oh, I didn't need to spend all that money. And you move on to the next thing and it comes with you in your experience. But this material stayed with you for a long time.
Yeah.
Why?
Definitely because of my own journey and struggle with mental health, and this project and I found each other at a time when I could actually, it could reach me in a way that I could really absorb because of all the work I had been doing. So it really sunk in at the time that I was working on it, and that is like, you know, it's like meeting a soulmate, a friend soulmate that just doesn't go away. So when Stephanie came back into my life in 2017, when she moved to LA, it was like all of those feelings came back of excitement and passion. And, you know, when a good friend comes to visit you, you just are like, oh, there hasn't been a day that's gone by. I immediately felt like we could speak the same creative language to each other when we sat down at coffee. And that was a huge component is how quickly and easily we synced up as artists. We just sort of spoke the same language and we were interested in the same things. Her dad is a psychiatrist and she's just like super tuned in and smart about the human psyche. And that really inspires me about, you know, us being able to talk about the work in that really specific way. So the enthusiasm that she brought to the project has always been a huge motivator for me, because if she's going to work this hard, then I'm going to work this hard. And if she's going to put in her smarts this much, then I'm going to put in my smarts this much. So it's this constant game of, you know, matching each other's enthusiasm, and neither of us has ever really dropped the ball. So it's kind of been easy to keep the momentum going, which keeps the productivity high. But yeah, it's a combination of the two things. It's the material itself has always struck me as very personal and important. And then the relationship with Stephanie, my co-creator, has been inspired and motivated.
And how did your connection to the material and to that character and to her fundamental struggle shift between 2013 and 2017-18? As you were saying earlier, you moved to LA, you got married, you had a child, you just like aged and have more life behind you. How did your experience of being Fran change as a result of all that?
That's so funny. That was actually a concern of mine when we started working on this. I thought to myself, ooh, am I damaged enough to play this role now? Have I
gotten too healthy?
Yeah. And I was really concerned about that. And I think, can I swear on this show?
Yeah, sure. We can, you know, whatever. We can bleep things out. Go ahead. Say what you want to say.
Okay. Well, that's like, you don't have to be broken and damaged to explore those parts of yourself. It's a practice in empathy. You don't have to be at your lowest to connect with someone who is. And that's what I realized with Fran this time around is granted, I was sleep deprived and had issues at the time of filming.
I still have issues. Let me be clear.
But my cup was full and I was full of joy and gratitude and so happy to be, I was empowered, so happy to be working on this project. but it didn't mean I couldn't tap into my empathy for Fran.
Did that feel different though from 2013?
Yeah, it did. It didn't feel so all consuming. I could go home at night and really turn it off. I didn't have to like work my way out of it. And it also has to do the difference between theater and film. Theater for an actor is much more consuming than film is. You have to work for film acting. I really have to focus to get there, and then I can get out of it much easier. I don't know if that's true for everyone else, but it's just not you don't have the floor as much. So it's a little bit harder to take up as much space, which works for this film because it's such a small character.
You're not having to revisit the same things too every day, day after day for the length of the run. You kind of focus, you get there, you do it as many times as you need to, and then you move on from that place.
Yeah, and especially when you're so involved with production, like the way I was, I knew, this take is a wide shot where I'm just going to scoop some cottage cheese onto the mushroom burger and then we're going to cut. So like, yes, I'm in a very deep emotional, Fran is in a very deep emotional place in that moment, but does Katie really have to go there? Because I know what the shot is.
Right.
And so it's this, you kind of have to play this game of how far do I go and when? Mm-hmm. When do I access the real like nitty gritty stuff? And when do I just kind of like just allude to it?
Yep.
Because that's the job doesn't always require really going there. You can't get away with that in theater.
There is also there's a nuance to what you're saying too, because if it's the cottage cheese on the egg and it's going to be my wrists and hands in the shot, like I don't really need to be like living in the depths of the emotional pain at that particular moment perhaps. But if it's a wide shot and there's a little bit of action, something that James Gandolfini just did incredibly well, and because I do what I do, I pay attention to this kind of stuff, he's still living in it. Like he's still living in the reality of that character, even when the camera's far away, even when the shot's far away, even when it's just he parks, he gets out of the car and he walks in the door. There's an experience. He's got a secret. Yes. He's coming from somewhere. There's a thought process and we'll never know what it is, but it's why I'm watching him just walk for no particular reason. So it's the nuances of learning as you go, learning what the different shots are, learning what is called of you when, you know, and protecting yourself too.
Yes, 100%, 100%. Because you can burn out really fast as an actor on set on a 12-hour workday. And and James Gandolfini in those wide shots, he was doing his job. He's tracking his character arc. He's not dropping the ball, but did he actually tap into the ugliest of ugly in James Gandolfini in that shot? Probably not. He was carrying the torch from one scene to the other.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So just another question or two about the film itself. You know, when people have asked, so full disclosure, I'm an executive producer on it. So when it does come up and I talk about it, I reference how there's a real psychological, emotional struggle that is depicted in this narrative. And as I was saying at the beginning, the kind of believe umbrella of entertainment to affect change. And it is a piece of entertainment, but there's a real mental health struggle that is going on within this character. Mm. Do you have any particular, I don't want to overlay this onto you, so no. I'm putting this in the form of a question. Do you have any hopes?
Tell me what I'm supposed to say.
Here's your script.
Do you have hopes for how this film could affect a change around mental health or reach people who relate to the struggles of it beyond the entertainment value of it? I guess, is there any hope or aspiration that you or Stephanie or those involved have for how it may connect to people who relate to the experience they're watching, either because they have it, or a loved one does?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this movie has been, from the response I've gotten, and it's the response that I've wanted, is incredibly validating for anybody who's feeling alone, who's feeling disconnected to the world around them and scared to reach out. Because that's what her story is about, is a woman who, you know I kind of painted a quick synopsis of she's afraid of living, but really what she's afraid of is human connection. That's what she's afraid of, but that's what she wants too. That's what every human wants, is we're always craving that human connection.
And that's clear in the film.
Yeah, so it's this push and pull of the thing she's afraid of is the thing that she wants. What does that do when you connect with somebody when you're in a dark place, is that it opens up all the doors. And she's just so afraid of all of that stuff flying out of her. Because if you lock it in yourself, if you lock it up in yourself, at least you're not spoiling the beauty around you. But once you connect with someone, it wants to fly out. You just want to melt into them. And you could destroy the most beautiful thing, the thing that's closest to you, if you get all that gook on them, all that emotional gook. I think that's the biggest fear that she has, is getting all of her emotional gook on the world around her and the people around her. So anyway, what do I hope people get from this movie is that that they're a little less afraid of that. That opening up is actually that's your own narrative. That the person that is with you actually wants for that. They want to get a little dirty because they love you.
It took a long time for me to say the word depression. It took a long time for me to think that was the word for the thing that I was maybe experiencing. And then it took a long time for me to say it. And then it took a long time for me to like truly do something about it.
Yeah.
And there's a resistance to, I think in addition to, I resonate with the emotional gook. I don't want to spoil the world around me. But then there's also the, if I say it, then maybe it's true. And then I'm putting it out there. And then I'm identified as this thing.
Yeah.
But the reality is part of depression. And I don't know if we would say that Fran has depression, and we don't need to get into like the clinical diagnosis of Fran, but there's distorted thoughts and there's distorted feelings. And what happens is when they are internalized, it just feeds on itself. It's not bouncing against anything. There's one great scene where we watch Fran in her internal monologue go through this tremendous journey. But the person that she's in the scene with, like nothing has changed for that individual. And it's just a very confusing situation for that individual. But we're allowed to experience her
perceived reality.
Her perceived reality, which feels real.
Yeah.
And until the words come out and until you're connecting with another human and getting feedback, it's just all what's going on internally. And that's so damaging. And I felt like that was a piece of the film. And that scene in particular, it was like, that is perfect. Like that is exactly what that experience is.
Yeah, totally. And it's funny, you say it took you a long time to even say the word depression and then label yourself as someone who deals with depression. And I think I kind of just like raced through the fact that I was in therapy during this process, but that was huge to show up for therapy. That first day, I was shaking. I couldn't even speak. My husband came with me and sat in my first therapy session just to be there with me and to help me like try it out. Yeah. It was like a try. I wouldn't even admit that I was going. And I was just so scared of bursting, of like getting all of this gook out of me and making it real. Once those thoughts are out of your head, you think, oh my God, they're going to take over the world. They're so powerful. And it's the complete opposite.
Right.
Once they're out of your head, they kind of just like deflate. Yeah.
Maybe as a kind of concluding subject, I do want to spend just a couple more minutes talking about, again, the Sundance experience, but not so, well, it's not really the Sundance experience so much as women in filmmaking. I know that there, you know, you and Steph, the editor, Stephanie as well, producer Jessica Lauren Richmond. We've talked about the playwright, Kevin Armento. Kevin is a male, but that's okay. We're okay with that. But this was a female-led project.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels significant. I mean, it's significant in general, but right now, culturally, that feels particularly significant. And I'd just be curious to kind of hear from you, how much does that element, does that resonate with you? Is that something you're particularly proud of? Is it, I don't mean this reductively, but is it just sort of a byproduct of like, oh, I like working with Steph. I like working with Steph. I like working with Jess. And we're ladies. Or was it more conscious than that?
No, it wasn't more conscious than that. It was really a byproduct. Having the women on that crewed up the film was all the talented people that we wanted to work with. But yeah, like you said, Kevin is a male playwright and Fran is his character. You know, we put her in the world of film, and that took a lot of finagling, but it is his character. He wrote a female, like a very fleshed out female role, and the DP is a male, and he, you know, every shot you see is so beautiful and sensitive and poetic. And the women that worked on this also brought like the best of themselves, and everybody. Yeah, everybody was literally the best person for the job, and it just worked out that there were a lot of women.
And now the question that you might be sick of getting asked, and I know I hear it enough, and I'm like, I don't know, check back later. So where can people see it? What happens next? Where do we go from here? So let's hear the response to that.
Our lawyers are reading over contracts because we have gotten a couple offers for distribution, but we really don't want we want to make sure we read about the exclusivity clauses in them, because what's really important to both Steph and I, both for our careers and also just to get the story out there, is that everybody can see it and they're not paying for it, because it's a 12-minute film. You're not making those to make money. Right. You're making them to make calling cards for yourself as an artist, and also for me, because of the topic of this film is for people to watch it and be affected by it, be given permission to like let out the ugly, let it dissipate, you know?
Natalie, any final thoughts from you or final questions from you?
I don't know a person who'd watch that film and not see a little bit of Fran in themselves. So I think it was masterfully done and really beautiful. So thank you for birthing it into the world.
Ooh, I like that.
She's a doula. She does that stuff.
She's a doula. I'm a mom. Also, Natalie was my doula.
A lot of inside baseball going on.
I realized I didn't give a link to anything because we don't have it, but we do have an Instagram handle, and that is where we will announce any release of the film.
Okay. So you Sometimes I Think About Dying, or what's the handle?
Yeah, it's at sometimes_think_. Shoot, you're going to put this in the text.
It's going to be in the program.
It's Sometimes I Think About Movie. All the words have an underscore in between them.
Perfect. Sometimes I Think About Movie, split by underscore. Yeah, and we'll have links in the program notes as well. And when there's updates, we'll also make an announcement and share it through Bloodstream as well, now that we've introduced the audience to it. So thanks for coming on, and congratulations.
Sharing your radical vulnerability with us.
all the time, anytime.
Thanks, Katie.